new, and welcome to Sox Talk on the Air. And for the first time in a very, very long time, I'm Mario Scalise, and the West Coast is Jason Gage. And it's funny, Jason, that we've been haven't done a show in about a month, and maybe what, 3-4 weeks, maybe even longer. And of course, we picked a day where both of us are ill.
Yep, both of us are sick. You'll hear us hacking and coughing, and it's pretty much kind of like the off season. Teams that spent a lot of money have been sick. And they've been pretty deranged, if you ask me.
So the off season may have led to our sickness, at least maybe not even physically, but just mentally. It has been a very frustrating off season with all the money that's going around. But before the off season, there was the end of the White Sox season, and it was kind of a sad end in that they didn't make the playoffs, which is never particularly good. But they fell late in the season, and I'm going to jump into it very quickly. The main reason, in my opinion, was a lack of heart, a lack of dedication, a lack of hustle. No matter what the players would like to say, that's different.
I just think it was a case of, obviously, the Detroit Tigers were amazing. They played great. They finished the season strong. Chicago White Sox just collapsed in the second half of the season. They were a very mediocre baseball team. We had mediocre starting pitching, and the offense was not as fantastic. The offense was amazing for most of the season, but we got to be honest, it didn't do its part at the end of the season.
Yeah.
The pitching actually was a little bit better in the end of the season than it was most of the season.
Yeah.
But it was just overall a poor season. There was some poor management by Ozzie Guillen. I think the only one that I won't put blame on, you know, guys like Jermaine Dye showed up all season long. Konerko was there. Jim Thome, as much as I slam him, was there, you know, most of the season, and he played good. Creedy was good. We had a lot of guys that were very good. The problem was some of the key contributors, guys like Scott Pesednik, guys like Garcia, Burley, the entire starting rotation, weren't. And Ken Williams now has this job of kind of remolding this team because Ozzie Guillen, whether we like him or not, is going to be the manager.
Yeah.
And one of the things, if I were GM, probably would have been to make a change in the managerial position. Not because I think it's Ozzie Guillen's fault, but because I don't like the way Ozzie Guillen handled a lot of the players in a lot of situations over the past year. I didn't really like the way he handled a lot of the things 2 years ago.
Yeah,
bottom line is we had pitching, an amazing pitching 2 years ago to win the World Series. And we saw the St. Louis Cardinals, which were a pretty poor baseball team for the sake of being world champions. But all you have to do is play strong in October. Get into October, play strong, and you can win it, and they did that.
Yeah, there's been a ton of issues with Guillen, and we actually had a show, one of the last shows we've done before our long stint of just doing nothing. We had a one show where we talked about Guillen, but going to the season, it was a typical bad season, and obviously 90 wins is 90 wins, and you can never criticize the team for winning 90 games because that's still a bunch of games, but it was a bad season in that nothing ever came together. As you said, in the beginning of the season, the offense was there. Later in the season, they weren't. Beginning of the season, the pitching staff wasn't there. Later in the season, they were there. Defensively, they were kind of on and off all year. Bullpen-wise, they really didn't have that depth. It was an issue where when one thing went right one day, something else went wrong to cause this team to lose or at least not make the playoffs. So that was the key part of it. And going to what you said, there weren't many guys you could blame for this season because everybody contributed at some point. It's just that when they didn't contribute, it was a combination that led to them losing. And inevitably, you know, not making the playoffs. So it wasn't a particularly exciting season. I think Guillen is largely in part to blame because I think I said in the show before, it was just a situation, in my opinion, that he was very grateful for what the players did last year and he was afraid to push any buttons or test them too much this year. Like he owed it to them to kind of back off and let them slack off in the stretch because I really do believe that they slacked off big time down the stretch. And in the pitching, in defense of the pitching staff, I can almost see maybe they're a little bit tired from last year because it was a long season last year with all the close games and the playoffs and the World Series. But from the position player standpoint, there was no excuse for them to be exhausted and worn out late in the season considering how many days off they all receive from a manager like Guillen, who likes to give players days off. So there was really no excuse on the position player front. And there are a few issues going into this offseason, without question.
Definitely. And one of those issues was the bullpen. And Ken Williams has already made a shakeup to the bullpen. Neil Kotz was the best left-handed pitcher in all of baseball in 2005,
yes,
with the exception of the closer from the Orioles that year who went to the Blue Jays. Can't think of his name right now.
P.J. Ryan.
Blame the cold. BJ Ryan, who got his nice contract and actually lived up to it. He actually lived up to his contract. He pitched pretty well
Yes.
in his first season. And then in 06, Cots was pretty – he was pretty still pretty damn good. People forget this. He was pretty good early on in the season. And then about just before the All-Star break, everything went south. It was kind of like Mark Burley, how Burley started off the season as a Cy Young front runner. He was pitching great, and that was it. He was done. Burley was just garbage the rest of the year. And Cots was moved to the Chicago Cubs, the Northsiders, and the first trade between the two teams since the John Garland for Matt Karchner fiasco from the Northsiders' perspective. And the Chicago White Sox get in return Aredsma and a guy named
Lefty,
Vasquez.
yes, Carlos. I think
Left-hander.
Carlos
Yeah,
Vasquez,
Carlos
lefty,
Vasquez.
double A pitcher. I think he projects to be a reliever too, if I'm not
He's a
mistaken.
reliever.
Yeah.
Ken Williams said that Vasquez was a key part of that trade. He's a little bit older for his league. He's not rated as a top prospect, but he had very good peripheral stats.
Yeah, and
I don't know
Aredsma, I
much about his
think.
stuff. It doesn't seem like anyone commented on his stuff either.
Yeah, and I think Aredsma, I think he finished off the month of September like 13 scoreless innings or something along those lines, where his September ERA was in the one. So I didn't see much of that. So obviously numbers can be deceiving, especially late in the season. But he did finish the season somewhat strong. He is considered a hard thrower, which is obviously what Guillen wanted. I think he made that comment late in the year, that he wanted hard throwers in that bullpen, kind of going off what the Tigers did last year. But still, trading Neil Cotts, it was very tough for me to see because I've been a very big fan of Neil Cotts since I first seen him, come up with the White Sox in that trade with the A's. And he had an unbelievable 2005 season, had an ERA in the twos, and by doing it simply by throwing a fastball that he was locating very, very well and deceiving and hiding very, very well, it was unbelievable to see. So it was definitely a tough trade to happen. However, at the same time, the last Sox player that left that I kind of was upset to see go was Miguel Olivo, and at least the immediate, the very near impact of that trade was pretty good for the Sox. So hopefully this turns out to the same, the same way.
Yeah, it definitely gives the White Sox what has to be the hardest throwing bullpen in baseball. You have Matt Thorne from the left side coming in throwing 95 plus. You have Jenks. We all know Jenks. McDougal. We all know McDougal. He can throw hard. He can throw gas. Aredsma can throw over 95 mile an hour.
Yeah.
So that's four guys that throw gas. And it appears that Boone Logan has pretty much wrapped up the second lefty spot. He's going to replace Cots. And I know Logan didn't have good numbers, but his stuff did look like a major league left-hander and a guy that could be a pretty good lefty out of the bullpen from what I saw, especially when he came up the second time.
Yeah, I think there is definitely some potential with the Sox bullpen, and there goes a lot of question marks with it too. McDougal, we've talked about it last year. You don't know how long he's going to go. Bobby Jenks, I think if he gets himself in the shape and if he gets himself ready to go and he improves his flexibility, I think he could be fine next year too. And Matt Thorne, I was very, very happy with Matt Thorne. I'm assuming, he should be fine from here on out, considering all the struggles he had early in his career. I think maybe he might have finally figured out working with Cooper. So their bullpen seems like it could be in decent shape, although they could probably have, it wouldn't hurt them to maybe try to acquire somebody else. But before we get into the Sox and really get into the offseason, we got to talk about everything else that happened. One of the big early things that happened, and it really wasn't even a signing, it was just a negotiation to sign, or a bid to negotiate. Wow, that was bad. What's the name? Dasuke Matsuzaka, the Red Sox bid on this Japanese pitcher from the Cebu Lions, paid $51 million just to negotiate with him. That kind of set off this whole offseason of
Spending
spending
spree.
front. Yes.
And what I want to remind people is you first may have heard of Dasuke Matsuzaka thanks to our fantastic coverage at FutureSox.com. And I like patting myself on the back and Mr. Scalise on the back because when
Me.
we interviewed a former White Sox hand, a farmhand who played second base, he happened to be coming from the Japanese League and he had faced Matsuzaka and said he is by far the toughest pitcher he had ever faced. We saw Matsuzaka dominate the World Baseball Classic and the Red Sox obviously hope they can come to terms on an agreement, which would be, in terms of total dollar value paid, likely exceed the amount of money that Alex Rodriguez makes per year. Of course, Matsuzaka will not get all that money.
Yeah.
His team, the Cebu Lions, gets the $51 million, assuming they sign the contract. And from there, you had the teams like the Detroit Tigers upgrading, finding another bat. They gave up some good arms for Gary Sheffield. And I know people dislike Gary Sheffield, but what this man is, when he is healthy, is one of the best run producers in all of baseball.
I didn't
A
like
Hall of Famer.
I didn't like the trade at first, and I still really don't like it, but I kind of eased off on it after I realized that this brings him back to Jim Leland. It brings him back with Dombrowski, with his days in Florida. He signed a 3-year contract, so it almost seems like Sheffield is going to be good in the clubhouse. But my concern is you're going to get him for 3 years, and you're going to get a guy who is, what, 37 years old? And if you go back to the career of Gary Sheffield, what defines Gary Sheffield, what makes Gary Sheffield that special ball player is his hands, is his bat speed. And as he gets older, you wonder if he's going to be able to maintain that quickness with his hands. And if that slows down at all, if he slows down his hand speed at all, will he still be that same player?
Well, Gary Sheffield was interviewed, and he said as a DH, his career is going to be extended another 3 years, and he thinks he can play till he's 42 years old. So that's what Gary thinks about that.
There was
That's
also
my attempted
then.
humor, but that's true. And it kind of leads me to who I think has had one of the best off seasons in all of baseball so far, and that's the New York Yankees. They had a very depleted farm system, and they were able to get three quality arms, one of them a pretty top prospect out of the Tigers organization.
Yes.
For Sheffield, then they were able to trade Jared Wright in his contract. Obviously, they picked up some of the cash to the Orioles for a hard-throwing reliever.
Yeah,
So
Chris Britton.
the Yankees have really put themselves in a position where they actually have a farm system. They already have their boy Philip Hughes in there. They have some other guys, and they're kind of sitting and waiting. And I think they're going to be players on the trade market front, not the free agency front, this season. And I got to give GM Cashman some credit. They also brought back Joe Torre, which was a good move. Joe Torre is a good manager for the high talent, high payroll team like the Yankees.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say the Yankees have had a great offseason, but they have had a pretty good one. And trading the trade for Britton, I thought it was pretty good on both sides. If in fact, the Orioles feel that Mazzoni can turn right into the pitcher he was, back in his Atlanta days. I think it is good that to finally see the Yankees actually worrying about payroll in a way and dumping some guys and, obviously declining or trading a Gary Sheffield and losing that salary and getting rid of a Jared Wright and losing that salary. It's kind of good to see. Now, really, between the Sheffield, when the Sheffield trade happened, really after, there wasn't really much that came until the Soriano trade, the Soriano signing with the Cubs, which was 8 years, $136 million. And many people have joked about this. I'm sure a lot of Cubs fans are happy about this. What do you see about it?
Obviously, like pretty much any signing that's happened in free agency this year, it was overpaying. However, unlike what it seems to be the vast majority of baseball think, and a lot of people seem to think this is a bad signing for the Cubs. And the only reason I could really put this as a bad signing for the Cubs is the fact that they've already spent a lot of money on their bats. However, when you have guys like Gary Matthews Jr., Juan Pierre making $10, $11 million a year, I ask this question. Is Alfonso Soriano worth $5 million more a year, $5 to $6 million more a year than Juan Pierre and Gary Matthews Jr.? And I say that exponentially, yes. Alfonso Soriano is a premier offensive player. He's a pretty damn good defensive outfielder in only 1 year out there. And you put him in a park like Wrigley, and he will make things happen. However, the Cubs are a team, and I say this as the Cubs are a team with the ability to have a larger payroll. If this is a smaller team signing where you really can't go wrong, yeah, it would be a bad move. But in the Cubs' perspective, they're still going to have the money to sign Zambrano. And as long as Jim Hendry is willing to address and spend the money on that pitching staff, I have absolutely no problem with the signing. They gave up too many years and it was a little too much money.
Yes.
But even if Soriano, I don't see Soriano becoming a nobody. He's pretty much proven that he's a guy that's going to hit 35 to, 40, 45 home
Yeah.
runs. He's going to steal the bases. He's going to be a legitimate top of the line offensive player. And yeah, maybe that's not worth $16 million, but it's definitely he's still going to play like a $12 million a year, and he's going to be an all-star type player. So you got to say to yourself, yeah, worst case, he's still a pretty damn good player, even if we overpaid a bit.
There's no knock on Soriano. He's a great offensive player. So, well, when it comes to the contract, I think the years does bother me. But more so than that is I really wonder if he even fits with the Cubs. This is a team that their problems really weren't offensively. It was their starting pitching. When you're giving a guy like Soriano 8 years, and on top of that, asking him to play center field, which should be pretty hard for him considering that it's going to be during the day. There's going to be the sun out there. It's pretty windy here in Chicago. I could see him having some problems. And if you're going to have a guy out there in center field making $136 million over 8 years, he's got to be able to handle it, and there's going to be some questions whether he can. Offensively, you know what he's going to do. The thing is now is if you're going to give $136 million over 8 years to Alfonso Soriano, you have to make the commitment to spend even more money now on other guys. If you simply call it an offseason and say, okay, we have Soriano, we're good to go, the Chicago Cubs, all they did is maybe jumped up two spots in the standings. They're still not going to make the playoffs. They're still going to be sitting home in October, and they're going to be doing it by having a payroll of probably around $100 million. So they have to go out there and say, if we're going to go out by giving Soriano $136 million, they have to make the commitment to give Zito whatever he wants or give some type of top-of-the-line pitcher some big-time money to help out a Zambrano.
And in addition to that, they're definitely looking to get Greg Maddux back. So if you and I know Maddux is old, and I know all those things, but if you get Greg Maddux back along with another pitcher, and you throw him in with Zambrano, and you give Rich Hill, you got yourselves a little bit of something in a division that doesn't really have much pitching.
If you're not going to get a top of line starter like a Zito to go with Zambrano, you better have a lot of depth because you know Zambrano is an ace, and if you could have four or five guys behind him who are just reliable starters, it's going to make their rotation pretty good to go with a very deep bullpen, in my opinion. So,
and sticking with the Central, we had a big signing, and it was leaves just a Boris client left in the terms of the big bats, and that was El Caballo, Carlos Lee, former White Sox. And I never thought I would say Carlos Lee would get a $100 million a year contract, but you know what he did? And from the Astros' perspective, it makes a lot of sense.
Yes, it does make a lot of sense, for the simple fact is this team has been lacking a hitter to complement Lance Berkman for a long time, and when you get a guy like Carlos Lee, it's not that you're getting a guy who you don't know what you're going to get. You know you're going to get 30 home runs. You know you're going to get 100 RBIs. You know you're going to get a batting average between 270 and 300. And on top of that, you know that there's a potential. There's a possibility, especially with him playing in Houston, that he's going to have a year of 40 home runs, 120, 130 RBIs. He has the capabilities of doing that. So at the very least, you're going to get a good year, possibly a great year. And if he does have a great year over 6 years, it does make sense for them.
Yeah, again, a little too much money.
Yes.
A little too many years, but that's going to be a trend in this market. So, considering the needs the Astros have, it's not a bad move.
And it's fine. And it's fine when you're filling a hole. When you're a team that lacks offense, giving a lot of money to a guy like Carlos Lee, especially if you've been a team that's been good. The Houston Astros didn't they make a playoff run? Didn't they actually get there? They've been making progress the last couple of years on, you know, going to the World Series in 2005 and putting up a decent season next year. It's not like they're in a situation where they're a last place team that's trying to get out of it and they throw a lot of money at a hitter. They've been a decent team that's lacked that offensive hitter, so it does make sense for them.
Plus, they have money to spend with Pettit becoming a free agent. Roger Clemens doesn't look like he's going to be back, and there's a lot of talk of him going back to the Red Sox and having one last hurrah there. And with that, another former Chicago White Sox signed a 2-year deal. And a move that makes absolutely no sense to me because it meant Vernon Wells is now on the trade block and he's going to be gone. So you sign Frank Thomas to a 2-year deal with a 3rd-year option, what could result in a total of $30 million for a guy that, yes, he is great when he's healthy, has proven the fact that he cannot stay healthy. And he had a year where he stayed healthy in Oakland. I give him credit. He was a fantastic player for the Oakland A's last year, but I would not count on him to do that for these next two or three seasons in Toronto. And let alone to make that signing and then get rid of a guy like Vernon Wells, an all-star, one of the best center fielders in baseball, makes absolutely no sense to me.
The Vernon Wells stuff, hopefully it isn't true, and hopefully they do decide to keep him, because if they are going to get rid of him for money purposes, that means that they shouldn't have been signing Frank Thomas. And Frank Thomas has proven that if he is healthy, he can be a very productive player. Now, I don't think he's proven that he can be healthy, though, and he's probably going to get hurt, if not this year, next year. And at that point, you're going to be giving him, what did he sign? It was a 2-year, $18 million deal?
So yeah, next year, he's going to get $15 million plus a year. I think it's pretty obvious.
I'm talking about Thomas. It was a 2-year, $18 million year deal. That's a lot of money for a guy who could very well get hurt the second day of spring training. So it doesn't really make sense for the Toronto Blue Jays, especially when they already had a pretty good offense to begin with. It's not like Frank Thomas I really didn't understand that. Let's go to Nomar Garciaparra. This was pretty much kind of a similar deal. However, I will say that at least he's staying with the same team, and I don't mind when a team gives out extra money for a guy if they're re-signing him.
And at least they only sign him to a 1-year deal. Injury-prone guys like Nomar is no different than Thomas. He's very injury-prone, but when he's healthy, he can hit.
Yeah.
and he can hit well. But Nomar, there's already talk about him possibly moving to third base, and there's no way Nomar Garciaparra is going to stay healthy at third. We've seen what
No.
happens with his arm and his elbow and everything like that. He's got a lot of issues,
He's got
and
to be a
I
first
kind of
baseman or a
thought,
versatile starter.
and considering the Dodgers need power, I think they should have shifted away from Nomar and found a way to get a big bat in that lineup. They have a lot of top prospects. They could have made a run at Vernon Wells. They have the abilities to go out and do some things. And they also went out and made a big signing. They signed
Yes.
Juan Pierre to a pretty
And
big contract, and it gives them a very explosive,
yes.
probably the best 1-2 in terms of National League style baseball in baseball with Rafael Furcal and Juan Pierre.
Yes.
And yeah, that was a little bit of too much money, but I like the way you put yourself in position because that's a 1-2 that in the National League is going to be able to make things happen.
Yes.
Ned Coletti plays a very old school style of baseball. He believes in that as the GM, and they have a good baseball man running the show, their manager. And you know what? I kind of like the move. I definitely like it. He's going to cover a lot of ground in the center field for in a big stadium like Dodger Stadium. And yeah, they do need to find some offense. They need to find some power in there. But this is a team that's pretty young. They got a lot of good position players coming up. You guys like Andre Ether. You have guys like Kemp. You have Loney, who's going to be playing right field at first base. It's going to be interesting to see. You got young guys in their rotation like Billingsley. You got fatties like Joe Zumaya who throw gas out of the bullpen. This is going to be a pretty fun team to watch, and it's going to be a fun team to watch get better.
Juan Pierre may not be worth the money, but 200 hits is 200 hits. And I think whenever a team has the opportunity to give an aspect to their team that no other team has, and this is what they will be doing by having Furcal and Pierre at the top of the lineup, they have speed in the 1-2 hole that no other team could match. And it's going to make it very, very hard to teams to play with them because they're bringing such a different style to the game. So I can never knock a team that tries to do something different and tries to really build a strength in the team that no other team could really match up to. So once again, a lot of money, but it makes sense in terms of what they're trying to do in LA with the Dodgers. Now, the final signing we're going to talk about, and probably I think we could both agree it was the worst signing of the offseason by far. It was for Kerry Matthews, 10 years, 5 years, $150 million. Why am I thinking it was 10 years? I think 10 years, I don't think anybody has signed 10 years in
Million
a
dollars.
long time.
Yeah,
And
awful.
I think $100 million was given to Carlos Lee, so there was no $100 million given to Gary Matthews. Although they may as well have given him $100 million over 10 years, right? While they were
Yeah.
at it, might as well have done it, right?
Yeah. Why not bring back Move
It
On?
was a
This
five-year, $50 million that the Angels did give to Gary Matthews, the one-year Gary Matthews, the Gary Matthews who prior to 2006 was a very, very average, you could even say mediocre ball player.
The guy that up until 2005 was a fourth outfielder. So obviously there's some things. The Angels had a serious need. They needed to improve their defense. Their defense was god awful last year, and it was a big change. And it was a reason they didn't make the playoffs. You can talk a lot about the Angels' lack of offense. You can talk about a lot of different things, but the Angels over the years under Mike Scioscia have been one of the premier defensive teams in baseball. They're a team that doesn't lose games. And last season, they lost games with their defense. Gerry Matthews Jr. is a serious upgrade in center field because they had Sean Figgins out there part of the year. They tried Darren Erstad out there part of the year again. They had an all-around experiment. And Figgins is a good center fielder if he's playing a lot there, but when you're moving him all over the field, you have some
Start to
lacking. And what
adjust.
Gerry Matthews Jr. is he's a top-notch center fielder. And he's a guy that last year did a very good job at the front of the order. He draws walks and he does a lot of things. But you definitely have question marks of whether he's going to be able to duplicate what he did last season. I think if he duplicates what he did last season and does that roughly over the next 5 years, yeah, the Angels are going to be pretty happy with this signing because they had a need. They don't have many prospects there. But this is a team that has every freaking prospect in baseball and could go out and get Vernon Wells. They could have given him right then and there a 5-year deal worth $80 million if they wanted to, Vernon Wells, and they could have made something happen. But once again, GM Bill Stoneman sits there and is afraid to make a move. GM Bill Stoneman is a lot like Dan Evans, former White Sox exec, former Dodger general manager, a guy that has no balls. He's not willing, and if you don't have balls, you're not going to be able to win the World Series. And you can tell me the Angels won the World Series, but that was not Bill Stoneman's team. That was Bill Bavese's team, despite the fact that Stoneman was GM at the time.
I
So I
think.
just like to say the Angels did a horrible job when they had chips. They have guys like McPherson, Koshman. They have so many guys, and they don't have rosters for them. And the Angel fans aren't going to sit around and wait and watch these guys develop. because the Angel fans want to see a winner. Artie Moreno pays a lot of money to see a winner. And this franchise is relying on the fact that they're going to continue to win and continue to basically cut into that Dodger market. And they're not going to do it by getting guys like Gary Matthews Jr. They're going to do it by going out and getting guys like Vernon Wells and kind of stepping up and deciding, yeah, we may not need these couple prospects. Let's go get out and get a superstar to team up with Vlad Guerrero, because Vladdy's not going to be in his prime that much longer.
Are you breathing now?
I am.
Well, I'm going to get back to Gary Matthews. I do think that the Angels, if he duplicates what he did last year, the Angels have to be pretty pleased by giving him 5 years, $50 million, not the $100 million that I said. I think they should be pleased because that was his best year yet. So if the Angels are expecting him to drive in 110 RBIs next year, to drive in 110 runs and play better than he did this year, they're stupid. I will say this, though. If Gary Matthews does, in fact, go out there and duplicate next year, I think it's going to be bad on a whole for baseball for this simple point. If he does that, if he drives, and what he drove in, about 80 runs last year, he played great defense. If he puts up the same numbers he did last year, from then on out, from 2006 and beyond, what you're saying is guys who play like Gary Matthews are worth $10 million a year. I think what Gary Matthews needs to do is he needs to exceed those expectations and be a very, very good player to pretty much say, wow, for $10 million, he's worth it. Or he's got to completely suck so that every GM knows and looks at that signing and says, you know what, maybe we shouldn't be giving 5 years, $10 million. God damn it, 5 years, $50 million to a guy like Gary Matthews who hasn't proven anything outside of 1 year in his career. I got to get my numbers right.
I could definitely buy into that. And with that, we've kind of recapped what's happened already in the offseason, and there's three big names left. Two of them represented by the man, the myth, the legend, Scott Boras, and this is what Boras does. He makes sure his guys are the last ones on the market. It's been his strategy all along, and I'm talking about Barry Zito and J.D. Giroux. Zito, you have the Mets spending wanting to get him. You have the Angels wanting to get him. You have pretty much any team with a lot of money going after him, especially with needs in the rotation. And then you have J.D. Giroux with the Red Sox, you know, apparently all over him and all about him. And he's the type of guy that could even fit with the Angels. And the Dodgers obviously kind of missed out on him as he opted out of their contract. And then the final name, Jason Schmidt, who wants to stay on the West Coast. You have the Seattle Mariners. He's from Washington. You have the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Ned Coletti ties to Schmidt. And I would be shocked if he doesn't end up in one of those two places in what I would consider the bargain deal of the big names. Because I think Schmidt will take a 3-year deal, which is a good thing for a starting pitcher. And yeah, he'll get $13, $14, $15 million. But Jason Schmidt, when he's healthy, is a $13 million a year pitcher, and I don't have a problem with that.
I want to get on Schmidt, but I think you made a great point about Scott Boras and leaving his guys on the market till the very end. And when you look at Barry Zito, he was by far the best starting pitcher out there. So now when you look at the Boston Red Sox giving $51 million just to negotiate to Matsuzaka, he could go to every single team and say, look what the Red Sox did just to negotiate with the guy who's never played in the major leagues before. Barry Zito has, he deserves that type of money. And when you look at J.D. Drew, sure, he has his injury problems, but when Gary Matthews is getting 5 years, $50 million, he could say, well, if he's getting this much, J.D. Drew is definitely better than Gary Matthews. This is what he's worth, and it's going to happen the same thing. Now, as far as Jason Schmidt goes, 3 years, $39 million, I don't like, for the simple fact is that he does have injury problems and he's getting old. And yes, you are right. If he is in fact healthy, he's going to put up very good numbers and he's going to be an ace possibly for many teams. But I don't like how so many teams nowadays are giving contracts out based on, well, if a guy is healthy and if he could possibly remain healthy, this is what he's going to do. It shouldn't be about that. Contracts in baseball were always based on the past. What has a guy done for you? What did he do, you know, the last few years? Jason Schmidt, the past couple of years, has been hurt, hasn't he? Shouldn't that put a question mark into how much you give him? This isn't the NBA where you give guys contracts based on talent. You give it based on what they've done. And I think Jason Schmidt has a lot of question marks with him.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. So does J.D. Drew. So do a lot of the guys that signed the contracts they did. But Jason Schmidt last year had a good season. He's been a Cy Young Award winner, so I definitely see every reason why. If I were a GM and I was going to spend all the money, he'd probably be the wisest. If you're going out in free agency, he'd be what
Yes.
I would consider the wisest of
Okay.
the big names. With that, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and get back to the Chicago White Sox and what we think the White Sox could do, should do, will do type of deal as we continue our hot stove edition of Sox Talk on the Air.
All right, welcome back to the show. I gotta give a very, very big thank you to Jason, who stopped me from keeling over, because I'm a very tired person right now. So I had to regain my strength. So thank you for that, Jason.
You're welcome.
I
I figured
appreciate
the
that.
listeners probably wanted a break from hearing us yap about everything and to kind of refocus on the Chicago
Yes.
White Sox, and we promised that. But first,
And I did
we
look
got
into
breaking
to the
news.
Matthews contract. He was in fact getting $100 million.
Yeah. New shock. Gary Matthews Jr. thanks you for that one. But we have breaking news. Sox Talk on the Air has learned
Sox talk.
that Dave Roberts is apparently going to sign a contract with 3-year deal, 15, 18 million. And when you hear this show, we may find out that we're completely wrong and he never really signed. But that's the scoop. That's the skinny as
That's the report
ESPN.com
that's
would
going
say.
out there, which sucks to hear. Because once again, all these contracts that go out there, you wonder, are these guys worth it? And usually you could say no. So, but whatever. Who cares anymore? Let's just stick with the Sox, who haven't been dumb enough to throw any money out at some mediocre free agents. Luckily, at least they haven't so far. But is there anybody out there they could possibly dab into? Possibly?
Aside from the fact that the San Francisco Giants have gotten older, who knew it was possible? There are a lot of names that there's a lot of options General Manager Ken Williams has. The number one option, he can just stay put. We're a team that's better than 91 wins. We have guys that played. Yeah, Joe Creedy had a career year. Yeah, Jermaine Dye had a career year. But those are good players. And his pitching staff
Had a
was
blow
way
up.
below what career numbers usually would indicate them to be. So yeah, you could stay put, and I wouldn't be shocked if that team came back and won 100 games next year.
The only reason I would make the switch is because, like I said in the beginning of the show, is I question their heart. I question their determination to want to win the World Series again. So if you're gonna bring back the same team, are you telling the players anything? Are you saying are you sending them a message of any kind? I don't know if you are. I don't know if Neil Kotz is sending by trading Neil Kotz, you're sending that message. So that would probably be the only reason I would like to see a move happen is just to try to mix a team up and invoke some life into it. But outside of that, you are right. This team is very, very talented, and this team was better than the 90 wins they posted last year. And if this team goes into next year and Ozzie Guillen gets his act together and pushes these players to play like they're capable of playing, they could very well win 95 games and make it to the playoffs next year. They have the talent.
But then we have other, there's always other options. We know left field and the leadoff spot were an issue with Scott Pesetnik. We know Brian Anderson sucked at the plate offensively. Yes, he had good numbers in the second half of the season, but let's be honest, he sucked.
And
And
even when he
yes,
had,
he
and even when
played
he had
great
good,
defense.
even when he had a good, hit good numbers in the second half, his defense started tailing off a little bit too.
So obviously, center field is a weakness. Ozzie Guillen thought enough of it as a weakness, and yes, we disagreed with him numerous times on the show that it was worthy of playing Rob Mikowiak in center field. And so that tells me right there that, yeah, we do not think that highly of Brian Anderson. At least our manager doesn't. So with that, center field as a whole, because I do not want them to go back next year and see another Rob Mikowiak fiasco out there. So you have those two keyholes. You have the bullpen still is an issue because the bullpen, yeah, we had a lot of potential last year, but it wasn't very good. It wasn't what the 2005 bullpen was, and the 2005 bullpen was amazing. The starting rotation, you could make a move to insert Brandon McCarthy in the rotation. McCarthy in his spot starts pretty damn well. And one of the biggest failures of Ozzie Guillen last year was maybe the fact that when our rotation was struggling, he didn't try to make a shakeup. He didn't try to do something, at least see what if McCarthy entering in the rotation would have kind of woke up some of the other guys in the rotation, as well as given a spark.
And that was the whole when Kenny Williams in the offseason, the big thing he was making was that the Sox have six starters and no other team could match that. And the reason the Sox wanted six starters is in case a pitcher got hurt or was tiring or was just struggling, you had a guy you could put into the rotation, and that didn't happen. And I think it might have just been a little bit of miscommunication between Williams and Guillen, because I think Williams had the plan of using McCarthy as a sixth starter and actually getting him some work during the season if the starters weren't panning out. But I think Guillen simply had too much faith in the five starters and wasn't really too comfortable with Brandon McCarthy. And I honestly believe that if it was up to Guillen, Brandon McCarthy still would not be in the rotation next year.
Yeah, Guillen's made a lot of comments to the fact that we have five horses and we can stick with those guys. However, I want to get out some hot stove stuff. This is my favorite stuff, you know, talking trades, talking possibilities. You obviously have the number one option, the New York Mets. The Mets have interest in Vasquez because GM Omar Minaya was the main guy in Montreal. He's very familiar with Vasquez. He saw Vasquez at its finest. And the Mets drastically need pitching. It appears, latest rumors appear, that Tom Glavine will be back with the Mets eventually, and that he's basically using the Braves as leverage because the Braves aren't all that interested in competing with the Mets. The Mets are obviously big players in Barry Zito. The worst thing that could happen would be the New York Mets getting both Zito and Glavine back, because their need for a starting pitcher would be a little bit less. However, if they just get one of the two, they still have a big time hole in that rotation. That rotation cost them the playoffs. It cost them the World Series last year. Mm-hmm. They also have a guy named Mike Pelfrey, and if I'm GM Ken Williams, I ask for no one else but Mike Pelfrey. If he's not included in a deal, kiss my ass. Don't make a trade. It's not worth it, because their other big-time arm is a guy named Philip Humer, who's got great stuff but cannot stay healthy, so there's no reason to make that trade. You don't trade one of your guys, one of your horses, because all our guys are 200-inning pitchers. They're guys that are going to go out there and give us a chance to win games. And you do not trade that unless you're going to get a guy that can become a horse. And Pelfrey is that type of guy. And if you can get a Mike Pelfrey along with a Lassings Millage, who's an overrated, albeit highly thought of prospect, outfield prospect, who played a bit with the Mets last year, or you get a guy like Mike Pelfrey and Aaron Heilman, who's a spot starter slash reliever, left-hander, that could give you some depth in your pen or rotation, then yeah, you make that deal. Another team to think about is the Texas Rangers. They've been looking pitching for years. They're probably going to lose Adam Eaton in free agency. They have a need. They have a guy named John Danks. We drafted his brother. We have a very good rapport with the Danks family, and Danks is a left-hander who's got phenomenal stuff. He's a front-of-the-line rotation potential guy. He's pretty close to being major league ready. They also have a guy named Hurley, a top-notch pitcher. The Rangers have a lot of options. They have a lot of possibilities, and they're probably the second-best fit for the White Sox, and they would have interest in John Garland, but I would think they'd have interest in guys like Garcia and Vasquez, and I think any of our guys are available. So you have those two teams.
Well, I don't want to cut you off. I think any trade for a Danks or whoever, I think it has to be made with the intentions of putting this guy in AAA and letting him work down there. And then next season, when you lose a Mark Burley, when you lose a Freddie Garcia, or maybe even both, that's when you have that opening to put him into the rotation. Or if you decide to even keep both, you know, Garcia and Burley, and you decide, or you know, whether Vasquez or Contreras, you decide to keep a combination of those three along with McCarthy and this young lefty or righty or whoever you may get, which is a young prospect, a young minor league prospect. I think that would obviously be the goal. Now, the thing is, I think is what's interesting with the Sox rotation as a whole is that you have, obviously, John Garland is untouchable. I think that's pretty clear. I think he has to be untouchable because he is by far.
Signed.
What's that?
He's signed for a couple years. Yes. He's still young. I find it very, very ill-sighted to move a guy that we have under control.
Yeah, unless it's a ridiculous deal where you're getting unbelievable talent. But if it's something where, you know, because Kenny Williams loves doing those fair deals where, you know, we get something, the other team gets something. It can't be one of those deals for John Garland, because he is by far your best pitcher. He's by far your most promising pitcher. He's the guy you have locked up for a few years. So he's the guy you have to keep. He's the guy you really have to hold at the top of your rotation. Now, the thing is probably of Contreras, Burley, Vasquez, and Garcia, the guy you want to give up probably the most is probably Contreras. The problem is that he finished last year on the injured list, which is probably going to keep teams away. And then you have Vasquez, who... Go ahead.
In addition to that, I just want to point out that Jose Contreras has a no-trade clause in his contract for this season. So that
That's
also makes
even,
it difficult because
yes.
he's pretty much clearly stated that he feels at home in Chicago. So you got to obviously find a situation where he's welcome.
And when you,
However, he is ace potential. So I think even with his injury concerns, he signed for affordably for 2 years. So teams are going to be willing to give up top prospects for him. You just got to get him to waive that no trade clause.
but I think it could still be pretty hard because teams are going to be looking at his last year and they're looking at, okay, he didn't do anything in 2005 till the end of the year. He struggled for the most part in 2006 outside of the beginning. You're going to question how reliable he is, whereas opposed to a guy like Vasquez, who at least he's proven over the years that he could be a 200 inning pitcher. The problem is that the Yankees, the Diamondbacks, the White Sox all traded for Vasquez, hoping that he was going to be the pitcher that everybody thought he was going to be, the guy in Montreal, and he's never been able to amount to that. So I wonder if another team is going to be willing to do the same thing, like the Sox did, like the Diamondbacks did, like the Yankees did. When you're looking at Freddy Garcia, I think value-wise, he's probably worth the most of the Sox pitchers outside of Garland. But the problem is when you look at him last year, and I'm sure you've noticed this too, he lost velocity towards the end of the year. But towards the very end of the year, he was learning how to pitch without that velocity. If he could learn how to pitch throwing 86, 87, and he comes back next year throwing 92, 93, you could have a very, very good pitcher on your hand.
I definitely think of all our pitchers, the guy that could come back and be the best is Freddy Garcia because he ended up developing what was one of the best splitters in
Yes.
baseball last year at the end of the season, and he did a lot of things. Although I completely disagree with you. Our number one trade value, and it's not even close, is Mark Burley. No one has more trade value than Mark Burley. And Mark Burley will get the biggest contract of any of our guys in free agency. I have
You know what?
absolutely zero.
I think my belief is I would bet there's some GMs out there who are looking at Burley and saying, you know what? He's on the decline, and he's going to what he did last year is what you're going to expect to him for many years. But I think you may be right. There's probably teams out there that are looking at him as a lefty who prior to last year was very, very good. So I could see where you're coming from. However, I do think that there's some GMs out there who are looking at Burley and just thinking, you know what? He's never going to be the pitcher he was.
Let's just remember, Burley never had great stuff. And if you compare Mark Burley and Barry Zito's resume, they're pretty much identical. Both have had one poor season in their career. Neither have been injury prone. Both of them throw a ton of innings. And both of them are going to get fatty deals. And Mark Burley, if you trade him, you better be getting. That is where you have to get two frontline elite pitching prospects and someone else. If you trade Garcia, I want one frontline elite pitching prospect in addition to one or two pretty good prospects. Vasquez, probably the only team that would get him and would really give us what he's worth, would be the Mets. And I have no problem holding on to Vasquez because, again, we have his rights at least for another year. So I don't have a problem with holding on to him. I think one of Garcia Burley has to go. And, with that, Garcia, there's also been some talk that maybe the Angels would be interested in making a swap, including Irvin Santana. And the Angels make a lot of sense because they also have another guy that I think would look fantastic in a Chicago White Sox uniform. And I'm talking about Sean Figgins, a guy that can play third base, shortstop, second base, left field, center field. I'm talking about a guy that could come in and be what Scott Pesetic was 2 years ago. And I realize statistically, both had very similar seasons. Figgins had a down year. He didn't have a great on-base percentage, but Figgins can freaking handle a bat. The man can bunt. He's a good slap hitter. And if you play him in one position, he's going to be above average at that position. He'll be above average left fielder. Actually, he'll be the best left fielder in baseball defensively. And he'll be an average to above average center fielder. So, and he'll be amongst the major league best in steals, and he steals at a very high percentage.
Why can't
So
they
he's
work out a
exactly
deal like that? I mean,
what Ozzie Guillen needs.
where they take a Garcia and even a Jim Thome, hopefully, and you trade him off to the Angels, and at the very least you get a Santana and a Figgins and maybe a couple other guys, and I would very, very much like that deal.
However, from the Angels' perspective, if I were the Angel GM, there's no way I'm trading Santana even straight up for Garcia. But apparently, the Angels have some
What
interest in
if
finding.
Thome's included?
Oh, yeah. But let's be honest. Me and you would trade Jim Thome.
But
The Chicago White Sox are
I
not trading
know, I
Jim.
know, but I'm staying in a fantasy land of mine. If the Sox would somehow be smart and say, we're going to trade Jim Thome, would the Angels be, would you think the Angels would be interested in a Jim Thome when a guy, if they had to have to give up a Santana?
Well, obviously the Angels would give up way more than that. The Angels would probably trade Santana, Brandon Wood, their top shortstop prospect, and something else for him. Because the Angels, if you want to name one need the Angels have, it'd be a bat. like Jim Thome in that lineup to give Vladdy protection.
Yeah.
So that would be obviously a phenomenal fit. But it's not going to happen. Joe
No.
Creede to the Angels is a phenomenal fit. If the White Sox are honestly going to give up Joe Creede and decide that they want to play Josh Fields at third base, which would be stupid. I'm not trading Joe Creede. Not happening. Because Sox fans everywhere overrate Josh Fields.
I think the whole Joe Creede thing is I think is similar to the John Garland thing in that, at least from where I come from, is that they've invested a lot of time into these guys, a lot of patience into these guys, and you can't simply take a Joe Creede and say, okay, we've been waiting for him to explode for all these years, then suddenly he has a good playoffs in 2005, he follows it up with a good 2006, and then you're going to trade him. It pretty much defeats the purpose of being patient for those 3 years prior. And then same thing with Garland. Why be so patient with him and go through all the mediocre seasons, and then when he finally explodes, trade him? It doesn't make any sense. They had a lot of hope and a lot of good things for Joe Creede. They were patient with him. You got to stick with him now. And maybe when he becomes a free agent, you let him go, or maybe his free agent year, you let him go. But there's no reason for you to trade him at this point. There's been way too much time and way too much just patience waiting for him. There's no point.
And now to kind of conclude my what if I were running the show and I was Ken Williams and we're talking a realistic offseason, it would be a pretty basic one because I think we're a pretty good team, and I would pretty much go after Ray Durham, and I would sign him to a 1 or 2 year deal, and I think Durham will bite on that. Durham had a phenomenal year last year. He had 26 home runs. He had
90
a very high on
RBIs.
base percentage, and I would play Ray Durham in left field. And if there's one thing I remember about Ray Durham, aside from the fact that he was one of my favorite Chicago White Sox, was the fact that when he played second base, yeah, he was a little shady on grounders, but the guy was probably the best second baseman in the last 10 years that I've seen when it came to going back and showing range on fly balls
Oh
and
yeah.
pop-ups, which makes me think he'd be a pretty good left fielder.
Oh, he was really good at that. I mean, especially when you remember, I think he did play with Ordóñez. He was still around when Ordóñez were playing. He helped him out a lot going out there for pop-up. So I don't think Durham going to left field, I don't think there'll be any problems. I think obviously some natural things are going to left field, but I think he really in the end won't have any problems playing out there, and I really do like that deal. I would like to see Ray Durham kind of finish his career with the Sox, or at least, come back here, because he was a solid ball player for them, and I think he'd be a good guy at the top of the lineup, maybe not leading off, but somewhere near the top. So I would definitely like to see that if the price was right.
And that would fill two holes. It would A, I think would make our defense in left field better because Scott Pacenek, as we all know, I think he was god awful out there in the outfield. And I also think it would make our number two spot better. And in turn, that means Tadahito Oguchi goes to the eighth spot and fills a major hole, which was the back of the lineup could not do anything. The 8, 9, and 1 was pretty worthless. And I'm talking about Wander Ribe, Brian Anderson, and Scott Pacenek for long stretches of the season.
Yes.
And then to go with that, I have one move, and this would be a trade, and it could be either one of two ways. We may be talking about Freddy Garcia, Brian Anderson, and Josh Fields, our top third base prospect, to the Angels for Irvin Santana and Sean Figgins, and maybe a minor leaguer. I really don't care about those details. Or you could just make more of a Brian Anderson or Josh Fields for Sean Figgins deal. And I will put Sean Figgins in center field. I will let him play there every single day.
I don't think
And have him and
the
Durham.
Angels probably won't have much interest in Anderson now with Matthews in center, right?
You believe that, but I still think they would have interest in him or Josh Fields because they're very highly thought of guys. And the Angels obviously have a need at third base. And right now, Figgins is their everyday third baseman. And yeah, I think they would rather have Josh Fields out there. That said, Sox fans may say we're overpaying giving up just that. So maybe, you meet in the middle and you find a way to make something happen if it's just a straight up deal. But I would find a way and I would overpay for Sean Figgins because I think he gives you what Ozzie Guillen wants. And if you are going to have Ozzie Guillen as your manager, you better damn well have something to work with at the top of the order. And
I will say this: if I do like Brian Anderson, I think if I would have to give up him or Josh Fields, I would give up Brian Anderson first, for the simple fact that I think Josh Fields is a good trading piece to have behind a Joe Creede in case whether Joe Creede were to leave or Joe Creede were to, or you could trade him or some combination. It's good to have that third baseman in the minor league, especially since they really don't have a shortstop of the future or even a second baseman. It's good to have some type of infielder down in the minors who you could bring up. I would look at Brian Anderson, even with Ryan Sweeney. because I do like Ryan Sweeney. I think he could be a valuable outfielder next year or the year after or something along those lines. So if I had to part with either Anderson or Fields, it would definitely be Anderson. And getting Sean Figgins to play center field along with Ray Durham to play left field, I think that would make a very, very good 1-2 punch at the top of the lineup. Defensively in the outfield, it would be actually probably
I
make the
consider
team.
An upgrade over Pastrnak Mikowiak.
What's that?
I consider an upgrade over what we had in Pastrnak and Mikowiak.
Yes, it would be. I mean, obviously, you don't know what Durham would do, but you could assume Durham would be able to handle left field, and Sean Figgins will be able to handle himself in center field. Will he be as good as Anderson? No, but he'll be able to hold his own, and considering what he's going to bring to the table offensively, which is some speed and some spark that this offense lacked last year, I think it makes sense. Especially since Figgins is a versatile player overall. I mean, you could literally keep this guy for a few years, and if you want him to move him to second base eventually, or if you want him to put him to third base here and there, you can mix him around and throw him a variety of places and do what Socha has done with him in when he was with the Angels, or now that he's with the Angels.
Exactly, and with that, Figgins is signed for a couple more seasons at a very, very reasonable rate. He's still young. Yeah, he's coming off his worst year of his career, but he's a switch hitter, and that would pretty much give us a very good 1-2 punch. It would give us a pretty complete lineup, a very balanced lineup, where Juan Uribe, your ninth hitter, is your only hole, and that's a ninth hitter that's going to hit 20 home runs.
And you don't mind.
I have no issues with that.
Because the defense Juan Uribe brings, I've said it many times, he is the best defensive player on this team, hands down. In my opinion, he is very, very good out there. And when you have a guy at shortstop who could do what he's done, bat ninth and hit 20 home runs, hey, nothing wrong with that.
And with that, you'd have a bench consisting of Ryan Sweeney and Rob Mikowiak out in the outfield, who could both play any of the three outfield positions. And Sweeney, we know how Ozzie uses things. So Sweeney's going to get at-bats in left field. He'll get at-bats in center. He'll spell die from time to time. And that's a good deal. Sweeney will be able to finally – he's been rushed so often that he'll finally be able to kind of relax
even
and
then,
soak things in.
You'll not only have a good bench because you're probably still going to have guys like Cintron and Ozuna and Gload. You're still going to have some depth in that bench. But you're going to have a guy in center field who could play second, who could play third. You're going to have a guy in left field who could play second base. It's nice to know that you're going to have guys out there who could, if worse comes worse, you could always throw them somewhere else. You know what I mean? If God forbid, let's say Tadi Gucci gets hurt a month into the season, well, no big deal. You put Sweeney in center field, and you could throw a Figgins or a Durham in second base.
Second base,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
You could mix things up. If Joe Creedy has to be rested, you could and Sweeney's working out really well. You could throw a Figgins at third base. It gives you so much versatility within that team, which I think is always cool to see, especially when you have a first base DH combination like Tomy and Canerico. I think it's good to have the versatility elsewhere.
Yeah, and with that, you're basically your lineup is completely set with those two moves, and you have one last thing you got to do, and it's open up a spot for Brandon McCarthy. And to do that, you make a trade. And like I said, Garcia may be traded in part of that Figgins deal, and we may have Santana. And if hypothetically we had a rotation of Contreras, Vasquez, Santana, McCarthy, and Burley, I have no problems with that. That's pretty good, and especially from the perspective that Vasquez would be under contract for another season after this year. Contreras, we would have for another two seasons, I think. Garland is the same case, if I recall right.
Well, you would be building that rotation around Garland, McCarthy, and if you were to somehow
Santana.
I mean, those would be the three guys you were working off. And then as far as Vasquez, Burley, and Contreras goes, you see which one you could trade and what you could get for him, and you go from there, and you build off these three guys.
You got to remember the fact that it basically would give us the following offseason four guys under contract with Burley the free agent. And we could say, hey, Burley, you had a great year. We want you back, and then go out and trade another one of our guys. Or we would be like, hey, we traded, we have Lance Broadway. We're going to bring him up. We're going to get draft picks for you, Burley. And we're going to take that $10 million and invest it somewhere else. We may say, hey, Joe Creedy, you had your second straight great year. How about a five-year extension worth $50 million?
I think one thing forgotten
is – you do a lot of different things.
Is now, let's look at the bullpen. And since you're kind of in California with the Angels and everything else, do you see a possibility of maybe the Sox in this whole Santana-Garcia deal, the Sox somehow getting a reliever in return?
The Angels aren't going to deal any of their guys. You could probably pick up Brandon Donnelly. Which It, he's a D, he'd be basically what David Riske was.
Yeah. I don't know if
So,
I care for him too much. I don't know if I care for his whole attitude and his demeanor too much. So,
but my
that's
theory is, you go through all that. You trade. You may trade. Let's say we don't get Santana. Instead, we trade Garcia for a Mike Pelfrey type. Well, now Pelfrey's the guy that may step into the rotation a year from now, and he may be a guy that we decide to use out of the bullpen in its entirety this year because he's got a great arm and he should succeed. Or we may get Pelfrey, another guy, and another guy, and we may take Scott Bezednik since he's going to be available for trade with another guy and go get a power arm from someone.
You know
Go
what?
get someone that we think is
I
going to work.
completely forgot about that. You know what? If the Sox were to somehow be able to do that and work out a deal in which they give up a Garcia and maybe a prospect or an Anderson or whatever, and they get a Figgins in return along with them, maybe in Santana, and they turn around and they trade a Scott Bezednik, sign Durham and trade a Scott Bezednik, I think you could probably trade Scott Bezednik and get a fringe reliever and make him into something, because that's really what baseball has become when it comes to relievers. You have your very, very good ones, the guys who are very reliable, but elsewhere you just got guys who are gonna kind of surprise and be these guys who this upcoming year may be the year that they explode, or it might be their career that they have. And you could probably trade Scott Bezednik for a power arm, or for a lefty, or for some type of right-hander who maybe he struggled last year because the year before he worked a lot of innings or something along those lines. I think that would be actually be a very successful offseason if they could somehow work out those type of moves.
And it's not, and I want to point out, it's not a big offseason. It's not like a real active one. You sign Durham to a contract. Durham may get $6 million a year for 2 years. But it's not awful, especially because it gives us some flexibility while guys like Josh Fields and Sweeney get at bats and get ready and get acclimated. Figgins is in center field. But you know what? Let's say Ryan Sweeney just shows that he's going to be amazing. We have the ability. We have a guy like Figgins that could move over and play different positions and still get all the at bats and still give us all that speed. That's not a big deal. We have the ability. We can afford to trade Brian Anderson. We can afford to trade Josh Fields. What we can't afford to do is trade like guys like Lance Broadway, our pitching prospects. When it comes to Garcia, we can afford to move him, or we can afford to move Burley because we can insert McCarthy in the rotation and go get another guy, and we can get another prospect to give us depth and another couple more to give us that. So we're talking about a trade for Figgins, a trade for or a signing of Durham. And possibly that trade for Figgins is the same trade for Garcia, or just a separate trade of Garcia, and then you move Pasetnik. So we're talking three trades and a free agent signing.
And you know
That's your
what
offseason.
I think is it's kind of cool about that is that you're going to be making your on a position player front, you're going to be aging the team. I mean, Figgins would be older than an Anderson. Durham's going to be older than a Pasenik. And, Dye obviously is getting older. So, from a position player standpoint, you're going to have a lot of experience. You're going to have a lot of older guys. Gucci, Przinski, Konerko, Tomy, so on. However, on their rotation front, by acquiring a Santana or by acquiring a guy like Danks or whoever you may acquire, whatever young pitcher, the Pelfrey that we were talking about, by acquiring this, you're really building up your rotation. And from a position player standpoint, from a lineup standpoint, when these older guys kind of get past their age or become free agents, you could kind of rebuild on that too. So you stack up on your you stack up your rotation to where 2, 3 years from now you're just worried about getting some hitters. And it's always easier to build up the offense than build up that rotation.
Exactly. And our rotation would be very good again next year, well, at least on paper. And we'd have four guys signed going into the following season. And we'd have some young arms kind of ready because Broadway would have time. A guy we may have got for Garcia may have time. Or we could be talking about Santana, who obviously is going to have time. So, any way you shake it, my preferred trade scenario would be a Santana Figgins package involving where we also got a prospect for Garcia, Fields, and Anderson. That would be my preferred way of going about things. But if we traded Garcia for Pelfrey, Hyman, someone else, or Pelfrey and Millage or whoever, I got no issues with that as well. And we'd still be able to get Sweeney at bats. We may be able to get Josh Fields at bats if we still have him. So all around, we're going to keep the payroll in very similar position, but we're going to have improved our farm system a bit. We're going to make the rotation a little bit younger, but still very talented, but pretty much we're going to make sure that it's going to be able to be intact for another season. And at that point, we may move another guy, but we'll still have a set of three guys now, McCarthy, whoever we got for Garcia, and Garland kind of there, and kind of just slowly you pencil in an additional guy in. So you're basically developing very slowly, but just kind of turning things over. And that's how you continuously stay good
Yes.
and be ready
Yes.
to compete on that
I
top level.
do. I love the way you're thinking, and we actually haven't agreed on the whole future of the White Sox many times, really, when you really think about it, the future of the Sox. We really rarely agree. So I do like what you're going, where you're going with that, because the way the market is going right now, you're better off trying to develop your own guys and just go about it that way. Like Williams made it very clear last offseason now, he wanted to get Anderson in the fold because he wanted to have a nice mix of getting a young guy in every year. And I think the successful organizations find a way to work in young guys every single year, whether it's on within the lineup or within that rotation. So if they could go out there and they could get McCarthy and Santana into the rotation next year, sure, your position players are going to be a little older, but now you're developing that rotation for the years to come. So I think that would be... I actually think that would be not only be a very good offseason in terms of next year, but I think it could really set the White Sox organization on the right path for many years.
Exactly, and it would mean we say no to guys like Andrew Jones, Rocco Baldelli, Carl Crawford, Vernon Wells, yeah. Jock Jones, and Jeff Jenkins, who could all be possibilities when it comes to the White Sox, whose names have all been kind of mentioned around from time to time.
Yeah.
But all I'm going to say is one thing. Vincent Padilla is asking for $10 million a year, and he'll probably get something close to it. That means if you're the Chicago White Sox and you hold five arms, all of which pretty much make less than that or right around that are a lot better than Vincent Padilla, you're in a position of strength. And it means Ken Williams should not be forced to do anything.
Take advantage of the dumb teams. Don't become the team yourself. Take advantage of these dumb teams out there.
And use that to your strength. And the Chicago White Sox, while it may be a more quiet offseason than we're used to with GM Ken Williams, have a lot of options. And hopefully Kenny was listening to us, got a little bit of perspective. Hopefully he was not in his head a lot in agreement, because I think if he does a lot of these things, we're going to have a very good team next year and a very good team for years to come. So we thank you for listening. And I want to remind you, we obviously are SoxTalk.com, but there's Talk Bears, Talk Bulls. The Bulls have been sucking, but they need your help and they need your support to get back on track with Ben Wallace. The Chicago Bears, on the other hand, they've been fantastic. The Blackhawks, yeah, they've been pretty hurt. They've been mediocre, but you know what? Go ahead. If you're a hockey fan, go support them. TalkBHawks.com and TalkBig10.com. I honestly have no idea how it's doing, but I can tell you that LSU knocked down Arkansas yesterday. Notre Dame plays SC later on today. College football is going to have a great finish. There's going to be a lot of controversy whether Michigan gets in and plays again or whatever else happens. So get on over there and discuss football. Thanks for listening. Hopefully we'll be back later on in this offseason, kind of running down some new possibilities as things change in the offseason. Mario, it was great to be back on the show with you. I look forward to having plenty more.
Same here. See you guys later.